Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Gentlemen, live from coast of the Carolinas by way of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this is the moment sports betting fans around the world have been waiting for. It's time! Introducing the Fistful of Cash Podcast.
What is going on, guys? You are tuned into the newest episode of the Fistful of Cash podcast. We are back after Christmas break, feeling rejuvenated, feeling refreshed, feeling blessed, feeling all kinds of Christmas spirit, even though the Christmas holiday itself has passed us by. In here with the co-hosts of all co-hosts, Soup. What is going on, man? Jingle, jingle.
In the words of the boat, Blake Bortles, I'm back, boys. Let's get it. he actually said that to the guys in the huddle when they put him back in the game for Cody Kessler this past week. That was the first thing he said to his huddle. And he's starting this weekend. So Blake Bortles off the hot seat, got his job back until, May when they draft. Before we get into picks, I just want to touch on something real quick. I've been a big Justin Herbert fan all year, and he's coming back for his senior season. He announced it. Number one quarterback recruit, or prospect, I should say. He was looking at a top 10 pick, and he's opting out of coming to the draft this year, where he's the number one, to going into the draft next year with guys like Fromm and Tua. It's experts, air quotes, claim that next year's QB draft class is going to be one of the best in a while. I don't know if I really believe that, because I don't know how big of a believer I am in Fromm or Tua at the next level. But so Justin Herbert not going to be a New York football giant. So I was wrong. And
well, not this year.
Well, I fully expect the Giants to go quarterback. So unless they pick a guy that is absolutely just god awful this year, I mean, I highly doubt he'll be drafted by them again next year.
That's true. So,
but yeah, so Herbert's going back. Maybe he thinks Heisman. Maybe he thinks Oregon can compete for a national championship. Maybe, just maybe, he's got a little bit of brains, and he thinks, or he realizes that there's more than football in one injury. You know, he might need that degree. I don't know. Maybe he's using awesome. His head. I don't know. So
it's weird.
But yeah, I'm back. So
that's good. That's good. All right. Well, we have a massive weekend ahead of us here. There's not a whole lot of time to dilly-dally or pitter-patter. So I do just want to get after it. But a couple takeaways from this last week, especially NFL-wise. What a weird weekend, man. The playoff situation is just an absolute cluster. It's very similar to whenever you put your headphones in your pocket and then try to take them back out. You feel like you know what it looks like going into it, and you can't believe the way it looks coming out of it. What are you thinking, going into this last week here?
I will say week 16, as a Patriots fan, it was like the best case scenario, man. Obviously, New England beat Buffalo. Never in the year of 2018 would I say thank you, Nick Foles, but Saint Nick delivered. He led the comeback after getting absolutely murdered on a sack to beat the Texans, which then jumped New England into the two seed. Now they just got to handle the Jets at home and the Pittsburgh Squealers. Mike Tomlin pulled a Mike Tomlin, 4th and 5 at the 50 with the lead. You know, just punt the ball and try and play a little bit of defense. No, we're going to run a fake punt to our fullback. So it was, man, was it weird. The Packers-Jets game was incredible. My goodness, was that an absolute great game. Seattle beating the Chiefs. Seattle's, man, they're red hot. The Raiders beating the Broncos. I know we talked about it, but what a scene afterwards. Derek Carr leads them to a win, which could, you know, could likely be the last game in Oakland. And he instantly went straight to the edge of the field and walked the entire perimeter of the field, shaking hands and giving hugs and taking pictures with Oakland fans. That was awesome to see. But the big game this weekend is the Sunday night game. It's the Colts and Titans. Winner gets in. You know, the Steelers and the Ravens control their own destiny. They beat the Browns. They get in. The Steelers need the Browns to win, which is hilarious to me that Pittsburgh's relying on Cleveland. And Pittsburgh has to beat Cincinnati, which they should with Jeff Driskel. The Vikings winning in. Philly can get in, I think, if the Vikings lose. I think that's how that set up. Philly wins and the Vikings lose, they get in. New England still has a chance at the one seed. Yeah, a long shot, but if the Chargers and the Chiefs both take a loss, I think New England would jump up to the one seed. There's a lot on the line this weekend. Like, only one game, like I said, that's really, you know, both teams, whoever wins gets in. But there's, the Bears are fighting for the two seed. If the Rams lose, there's a lot on the line. The only team that's locked is the Saints with the one seed. That's the only team who can't move in the playoffs.
All right. Well, I mean, you started it off with the very first game you mentioned, so we do want to just go ahead and get going with NFL picks here. That Colts-Titans game, what do you like about that?
I like the Colts on the road, -3. There's a lot of books that don't even have a spread on this game right now because Mariota is still in question whether or not he's going to play. We've done this before. Hobbled up Mariota, healthy Blaine Gabbert. Doesn't matter. I like the Colts to cover the 3 points in this game. Andrew Luck's been nothing short of incredible this year. And I expect him to have, you know, to cap off his amazing comeback year and take the Colts to the playoffs, which nobody thought they'd be there. Like, I think Vegas had their over under at 6.5 to start the year.
Yeah.
If they, you know, they win this game, they're going to be 10-6 and they're going to be in the playoffs. And right now, I mean, they've always had the passing game. Marlon Mack's running well. They've got, I think, the 7th best run defense in the league. Their defense as a whole was playing well, including their secondary. The Colts could be a surprise 6. I mean, the Colts, who would they play in the, they'd play the Texans. It'd be the 6-3 matchup.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Houston wants to see the Colts. I really don't. I sure wouldn't. You know what I mean? 6 seeds scare me, man, especially a team like that who has, you know, a top quarterback like Andrew Luck who can throw for 450 on you any given day. So, yeah, I think the Colts win this game. I think they get in, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the divisional round.
Yeah, I think this is definitely I definitely think that this is one of the more compelling matchups that's going to take place this weekend. And I'm with you. I like the Colts in this game a lot. I know that in recent weeks, we've been showing a lot of love to Indy, but it's justified in Andrew Luck's having a fantastic year. They're playing, they're, they're playing great football right when they need to. And like you said, Tennessee with a banged up Mariota or no Mariota at all. If he doesn't play at all, I think this game gets out of hand in a hurry. But if he's able to play, you know, they might be able to keep it close for a little bit. But even then, you got to wonder how much time are they going to let him see, even if he is playing and he's feeling okay, knowing that if they win, they're going to have to turn around and come right back next week. And is he going to be ready to go for that? You know, I just don't know. I don't know what strategy, if you're Tennessee, you try to employ here. Do you push him to come back and try to win the game and risk hurting him more? You know, I mean, how do you approach a game like this where you have a guy that's on the cusp of playing or not playing, but you know, in playing him is your best chance to win, but also your best chance that he won't be there next week in the event that you do win. So what do you do? I mean, it's a rock and a hard place for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, if he thinks he can go and you think he gives you the best chance at winning banged up over a healthy Gabbert, you have to go Mariota. Because if he gives you the best chance to win, you got to win this game in order to play next weekend. So you would, you know, you win this game first and then address next weekend later. But like, yeah, I just, like I said, the Colts rush defense is really good. Derrick Henry pulling the same thing he pulled last year, the last five games of the season, looking like, you know, the monster everybody thought he was going to be. I think the Colts rush defense will be able to contain Derrick Henry, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on Mariota. He's going to have to make plays with his legs. He's going to have to be accurate, and it's going to come down to a QB duel probably. And I don't know a quarterback outside like Patrick Mahomes or Drew Brees that I'm taking in a QB duel over Andrew Luck right now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. I mean, obviously, because we're making a play on it, but definitely something I'm going to be paying attention to. So college football wise, we're in it now, man. This is what, well, we didn't work for it, but this is what we've been gearing ourselves towards all season. And here we are now. Got a couple games that we do want to go over. As always, guys, there's going to be stuff available on Patreon. You know, if you don't know what Patreon is, because this is another thing that I've realized too, a lot of people don't know what the hell Patreon is. So Patreon's a platform that people that create content, podcasters, YouTube, whatever it is that you create, even if you're a musician, it's a website that you can go to and, you know, help support people creating content that you enjoy or partake in. So we have a Patreon page set up. If you just, you know, search, if you go to patreon.com/fistfulofcash, or just go there and search Fistful of Cash, we show up there. And we do have a membership tier available. And, you know, we've said it before, we do offer additional picks there every single weekend. You know, the games that you hear on the podcast are the free picks for sure, but there's also other picks that you get in being a member there as well. So if you didn't know what it was and now you do and you want to go there, please do. If you do know and just haven't yet, I'd ask you to consider it. And if you do know and you still don't want to, that's fine too. Just keep enjoying the free stuff and supporting the podcast. That's really, that helps out a lot too. But there are going to be more games, both NFL and college bowl wise. So if you don't hear your game that you're interested in, on the show, by all means, please go to Patreon. There's a great chance, or hit us up on social media. We'll be able to, you know, answer questions and stuff on there. But okay. Anyway, enough housekeeping stuff. The Camping World Bowl at the Camping World Stadium in Orlando, Florida. We got Syracuse taking on West Virginia, who was our preseason lock to win the Big 12, but that did not shake out. So we get a consolation prize here in the Camping World Bowl, taking on West Virginia, taking on Syracuse. The point spread right now, Soup's sitting at 2.5 points, with Syracuse being the favorite. Money line's -130, over-under's at 66. What do you like?
I like Syracuse to cover the 2.5. I touched on this when the bowl spreads first came out. I touched on this and I said I like Syracuse +7 because I didn't expect Will Greer to play in this game. He's, you know, one of the top four quarterback prospects going into the draft. I don't know if he'll play in the Senior Bowl. I think he will, just to showcase one last time for scouts. And I think he's going to take, I mean, he is taking this game off. He is not playing in this bowl game. David Sills is up in the air whether or not he's going to play in this game. And as far as Syracuse goes, Eric Dungy's playing. So I'm going to take the orange. I think this game had the potential to be one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting, non-playoff bowl game if Greer would have played. But now, I mean, West Virginia's quarterback is a huge question mark. I don't know if Jack Ellison's going to be able to keep up with Syracuse and their extremely fast, high-powered offense. I could see Syracuse winning this game. Syracuse could score anywhere between 30 and 45 points in this game. If I had to side with one side of the over under, I would just take the over because I know West Virginia's defense sucks. I'm sure Ellison probably fits their scheme well on offense, and Syracuse is going to put up the points. So if I had to side with the over under, I'd probably go the over, but I like Syracuse to cover the 2.5 more than anything.
Okay. 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 So, like I said, West Virginia and Syracuse have both gotten a lot of play from us and a lot of love this year. So another team that we've given our fair bit of time and attention to is Ohio State. And you got Ohio State, Washington, and Ohio State right now, 6.5-point favorites, -260 on the money line, over-unders at 57.5 against Washington. What do you like with that game?
I'm going to ride with another favorite. And it seems to be a trend in bowl games this year. The favorites are covering the spread a lot. Outside of today, where I actually took Duke +3.5, and I also took Wisconsin +3, and they both ended up winning the games outright. But as far as bowl games as a whole, favorites have been covering. This is going to be one of the most emotionally driven performances we've seen in a long time. This is Urban Meyer's last game. He's stepping down. He's not healthy. He can't coach anymore. The team's going to get behind him just like they did at the beginning of the season with him suspended. Haskins is now the top quarterback prospect. He can't play in the Senior Bowl. So this is his last chance to, you know, to put on a show for everybody and prove that he should be taken in the top five. I know Washington has shown spurts where they look good, but Jake Browning has been one of the biggest disappointments in college this year. He was coming in, supposed to be one of the top quarterbacks, and he's looked nothing but pedestrian. So I think Ohio State, boy, if they get up like 14, I don't know if Washington's going to be able to battle back. I think Ohio State might rout them like bad. These guys are going to be fired up. They're playing for their coach. It's definitely going to be one to watch. It'll be interesting at the end of the game to see how Urban Meyer reacts. This is the game I'm looking forward to watching outside of the playoff games for the sole fact that, you know, this is Haskins' last game. This is Urban Meyer's last game. I'd like to see what the Buckeyes can do here.
I'm with you. There is something about that whole playing for coach thing that really rallies a team together and has them put on absolute performances. Any word on, you know, how much playing time Haskins is going to be looking to see? I mean, is he coming out for the draft, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, now that Herbert's not coming out, Haskins, I fully expect him to come out for the draft. Especially if Urban Meyer was staying, I think Haskins might stay. But with him going, I think Haskins goes, and now he's number one, man.
Mess with that number one pick in play.
He's still battling with guys like Daniel Jones from Duke, who put on a hell of a performance today. Daniel Jones looked fantastic. I think Haskins plays. Seems like a prideful guy. I mean, like I said, even in that Purdue routing, he, you know, put his all even when they were getting murdered. So I think he'll play the whole game. And if he does come out, it's only because Ohio State's up a shit ton of points. He's not going to come out with Ohio State up 14 in the fourth quarter.
Okay. I can see that. All right. Well, you talked about him, so let's go over the playoff games. Because, I mean, obviously those are the two biggest storylines this weekend. Oklahoma, Alabama. Alabama's a 14-point favorite, minus 610 on the money line, over-unders at 77 points. That's a ton of points. We're both sort of in agreement in this, that as far as matchups go, this is probably the less competitive of the matchups. Alabama should cover that 14 points, and this just based off the fact that Oklahoma doesn't seem to be able to stop anybody, and it appears to be a variable close range shooting gallery for Alabama. I mean, what do you think with that game?
Yeah, I really think this spread is spot on here, and I think the over under is right on the money as well. It's tough to pick either side of these bets. I think Alabama will probably win this game something like, 48 to 34, maybe, 45, 31, something like that. I think it's going to, Alabama should cover the 14, but it's really hard for me to pick Kyler Murray as a 14-point underdog. I want to take the 2 extra days before we'll put this on the Patreon. I want to take the 2 extra days to really look into this and to make a decision, but I really don't know, man.
Well, it's okay to pass on the game. It's got to be talked about. I mean, it's too big of a storyline to not cover.
You got your two top quarterbacks as far as QBR goes in the nation. I think Kyler Murray was like a 96 QBR and Tua was like 94.5.
Right.
Your two Heisman favorites. It's going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so a game that's a little bit, we're planning on being at least a little bit more competitive. Notre Dame-Clemson. Clemson, 12.5-point favorite, minus 480 on the money line. Over-under is at 56.5 points. What do you like?
I like Notre Dame. I'm going to buy a half point here and take Notre Dame plus 13. And I think, obviously, the players to watch will be on Notre Dame's side. It'll be Ian Book and Dexter Williams. The quarterback running back combo. And on Clemson's side, it has to be Trevor Lawrence. But I think the X factor in this game is going to come down to the secondaries, which Clemson's secondary suddenly seems to have an issue. They've been exposed multiple times this season against South Carolina, obviously in their two close games against Texas A&M and against Syracuse. And on the other side, Notre Dame's secondary has been absolutely incredible. Julian Love and, that defensive back crew, they give up the yards, but man, do they shut down when they have to. They faced Michigan, so Shea Patterson, who's a very talented quarterback who should be coming out next year. Vanderbilt's Kyle Shermer, Stanford's KJ Costello, who's coming out next year. Clayton Thorson from Northwestern. They've only allowed 7 touchdown passes on the season. I read that and I was like, damn, that's crazy. 7 touchdowns, 12 picks. And 2 of those touchdowns came against Virginia Tech. So there hasn't been another team that's thrown for multiple touchdown passes against them. And they've only let up 2 touchdown passes in the last 6 games. So if you can shut down Trevor Lawrence and make Clemson run the ball, not that I think Notre Dame's going to win this game, but if it comes down to run game versus run game, I definitely think Dexter Williams and Ian Book will be able to keep Notre Dame in this and make it close. These two teams played in 2015. I think it was the Sugar Bowl. Clemson ended up winning 24-22. I don't know if it's going to be a 2-point game, but I definitely think Notre Dame's going to be able to keep it within 13. So I'm taking Notre Dame plus 13 points here.
Yeah, I was unaware of that that stat concerning the secondary. That sort of changes sort of changes things for me. I wasn't, I felt like I had a decent, maybe devil's advocate argument, but that, yeah, that secondary stat really is a double take for sure. Wow, yeah, I can't believe it. Only seven all year.
They've only let up seven touchdown passes all year. Jeez, that's freaking, that's nuts. Like,
yeah, that's wild. Okay. All right. Yeah. So Notre Dame to cover. Were you buying the half point to 13?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Notre Dame plus 13. All right. All right. This is your sweetheart game. This is your consolation national championship. I'm just going to, I'll let you run free here. Georgia, Texas in the Sugar Bowl. Georgia's a 13-point favorite, minus 520 on the money line. Over-under's at 58.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over in this. I'm going to watch it, obviously, being a Georgia fan. I'm going to watch. We've played a lot of Texas this year, so obviously I'm a fan of the way Texas plays. I like the over here. I don't know. There's something about it. You look at their recent games and stuff, and you'd probably think the under is going to hit, but I just think both teams go out and just let it fly. Jake Fromm, obviously with Justin Fields, you know, debating a transfer, not debating a transfer, doesn't know what he's going to do. Jake Fromm's, I don't want to say playing for his job because it's his job, but he's going to prove to people, hey, this is why Justin Fields isn't playing. DeAndre Swift and Evander Holyfield should run wild on Texas. I like the over, and it's going to be a fun game to watch. There's so many good games for like non-playoff bowl games, man. There's a lot to watch. You've got the Iowa State, Washington State game the past 2 days. The only thing about bowl games is they really don't mean shit, and that was proven yesterday. Like yesterday, a rain delay. You know, they had lightning, and what do they do with the first responders bowl? Cancel it. Like these games, they really don't mean shit except to like ESPN, who's making money off them. Cause I think they've had every single bowl game so far. I think they have the contract for like, you know, every bowl game under the sun, but yeah, there's a lot to watch. There's going to be a lot of good games. I love Bowl Mania. It sucks. The football season's coming to an end though. It really sucks.
Yeah. I'll be keeping my eyes open for prop plays for that game. I think little Jordan Humphrey's going to catch at least two. I can see him having going absolutely ham sandwich, two, maybe three touchdown performance from a man, Lil Jordan. I don't know,
but it all depends. Well, no, it actually, that is beneficial because, DeAndre Baker, who is the number one cornerback in the nation, is skipping the game. So yeah. Georgia will be without the best corner in the nation. So yeah, I mean, he'll more than likely catch one, if not two. Cause without Baker there, there's going to be an opening, which is another reason that I think the over is probably going to hit. There's a lot of guys, Georgia's defensive team. And there's a lot of guys that are considering sitting out, you know, because the money's in the NFL and you don't want to go out there and tear your Achilles in the last game of your college career and get screwed. So,
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We've seen it happen far too often. I don't blame these guys for sitting out at all. How long do you think it's going to be until you see football players go the route of, you know, like basketball prospects where they sort of start getting recruited and developed early and then really just sort of put them in position as far as like specialized, whatever you want to call it, training, strength and conditioning training, things like that, where you sort of have this rough package that you can plug into and sort of mold and shape. You know, you see these kids coming out of like these IMG academies and stuff like that for hoops, where it's basically just a pro factory, you know, where they're just taking these kids with elite level talent and giving them the basic skill sets to move them to the next level where they can be molded into a player that a team needs. You know, do you think that football will ever get like that, or do you have to be out there with the pads on, smacking, you know, making plays and stuff like that?
I think, I don't know if football can get to that point, because as far as game speed and the size of guys you're going against, it changes so drastically from high school to college and college to NFL. As far as basketball goes, I don't think it's that big of a difference. You know what I mean? There's obviously a difference between the caliber of talent in high school versus college and college versus the NBA. But it's almost, I think NBA game speed it's not as intense as college. You know what I mean? These kids in college games, as far as basketball goes, have a bigger sense of intensity than NBA. NBA just seems so lackluster, and it's like, okay, we'll just go through the motions. When it comes to NFL, it's a contact sport. It's a whole different ball game. I love the people that say, you know, Alabama would beat the Cleveland Browns. It's like, no, they wouldn't. Even that 0-16 Cleveland team would absolutely shit on this Alabama team, because it's, you know, 22 professionals versus 5 professionals and, you know, 17 communication degrees.
Right.
There's no comparison. Any NFL team would murder any college team. And I think Bleacher Report did an article on it. We talked about where they actually put out spreads on what it would be if Alabama played every single team in the NFL. And I think it was like the Saints and the Patriots would be like 38.5 point or 40 point favorites against Alabama. Like there's such a large gap as far as talent goes. So I think that's a lot of the reason why college does, you know, you got to play 3 years, because you got to make sure you're physically ready, you're mentally ready, and your skill set is fully developed before you can get to the league. NBA and basketball, it's like, you know, a 17-year-old kid can play in the league. We've seen it with LeBron. We've seen it with Kobe. We've seen it with Andrew Bynum. We've seen it with Kevin Garnett. There's not a 17-year-old kid in America that I think can play in the NFL as far as football goes. He's not ready. His body's not ready.
Yeah. I think if it is possible, or if you're going to find it in an area to be possible, it'd be somewhere along the line, whether it be O-line or D-line, because you can get a guy that's absolutely, you know, brick shithouse big and, you know, develop the agility and then work on the mental as far as, you know, looks and schemes and things of that nature. I'm with you though. I don't think we'll ever see it as far as like highly skilled positional players, you know, like quarterback and things like that. Maybe even wide receiver, dude. If you could get a guy that was super fast, you know, and just that wasn't afraid of contact.
Yeah,
he's
got to have enough field time to understand defenses and know when to stutter step and hit the out route and cut. The closest thing we've seen to a guy, a freshman that looks like they could play in the league right now, was when Jadeveon Clowney came to South Carolina. Yes. That's the closest thing I've ever seen to, you know, an 18-year-old kid that's like, okay, this dude could be in the league.
Right.
And I think those 2 years at South Carolina, 3 years at South Carolina helped him tremendously. He got bigger. He got faster. He got, you know, smarter, more intelligent as far as understanding, you know, the offensive line block schemes and when to, shed a block, when to use a power move. It's a lot about the field time and actually getting an understanding of what the opposite side of the ball does. So it would be interesting. I'm sure at some point some kid's going to come along and it's going to be some kind of ridiculous like quarterback arm talent who his dad was a mathematician and his mom was a brain surgeon and his IQ's, you know, 650 million and he's going to pick apart. Eventually there's going to be somebody that comes along.
Right.
But as a whole, I don't think it would happen.
Yeah. Plus the thing with hoops too, is if you can hoop, you can hoop. I mean, it's like the universal language. If you can play basketball, you can play. You know,
basketball takes less intellect and more muscle memory and raw, just God-given talent than football does. Football takes a lot more understanding of the game than basketball does.
Yeah. That's just always like my, you know, my thing would be, you know, like you go play outside and somebody can't play for shit outside. And then you take them inside and they can play decent inside. Are they a good basketball player? Or are they just a good inside player? You know, if you can play on blacktop, you should be able to play on hardwood, I would imagine. That was sort of always the mentality I took. I wanted to try to be as good outside as I was inside. But anyway, all right. We had a lot go on this weekend or this last week, dude. Leading up, we got a UFC event this weekend. I got picks for the whole main card here. There'll be more plays as far as Patreon goes for prelim fights, but we've decided we're going to cover the entire main card. So I will I'll give you a matchup in the line. You tell me what you like, and then I'll interject my two cents. Cool with that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. That works.
All right. All right. So I don't know if you're familiar with them, but you got, Alex Volkanovski taking on Chad Mendes as the curtain jerker for the pay-per-view card. Volkanovski is the +125 underdog, Mendes -145 favorite. The over unders at 2.5 rounds, with the over being the favor there at -150. Any thoughts on this fight?
I guess Volkanovski has the reach advantage. Definitely the more aggressive fighter out of the two. I haven't seen him fight much, and I've seen, you know, a good bit of Chad Mendes. But when it comes to a toss up here, and as far as I'm concerned, I'll probably ride with the underdog in Volkanovski.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the play. And here's the thing is Volkanovski's been asking for this fight. He wants Mendes. My thing with Chad Mendes, and here's is Mendes should win this fight. There's a reason why he's the favorite. But I think Mendes is I don't think Mendes is striving to be world champion anymore. He's got a very successful life outside of the cage. So I wonder how much of this is, I mean, obviously you don't want to get beat up in front of your friends and family. But you know, those two losses to Aldo and then the short notice loss to McGregor, you know, 0-3 in title fights, you're not moving up to lightweight because you're too small. Featherweight is exactly where you need to be. He's super successful outside of the cage. I just don't know if the hunger is necessary there. Now, when he came back after the steroid suspension, he got slept by Frankie Edgar. And then he beat Miles Jury recently, and that was pretty quick. I heard John Anik say earlier that in the last 3 years, Chad Mendes has 5 minutes of octagon time.
That's crazy.
Right. So I'm just not sure that this is his fight. Volkanovski is hungry. Volkanovski is I don't know, is outside the cage life, but I can't imagine he's as successful as Mendes is. And he realizes what's at stake and he's after that name. He wants that name on his belt. Mendes has the better resume, and has the better skill set. Like I was telling you earlier, I think Volkanovski is like a little tiny, not a dollar store version, but he's definitely like the Walmart brand to the name brand of Chad Mendes. He's just a little bit cheaper of a version of Chad Mendes, but I think that the hunger is going to come into play. And I think Volkanovski might sneak out of this fight, with a little bit of an upset here. So Volkanovski +125. I think that's the play for sure. For that fight. So, moving on, we got another fight. A guy that, you know, is a low-key fan favorite. Aleer Latifi has taken on Corey Anderson, the king of terrible fight nicknames. Corey Anderson, who is the +120 underdog for good reason. And the over-under is coming in at 2.5 rounds for this one as well, with the over 2.5 being favored at minus 135.
I'm going to go Latifi. Corey Anderson, the only thing that makes him reasonable to bet is his wrestling ability. And he's going to be trying to wrestle the closest thing I've ever seen to a human that's shaped like a cube.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable, man.
So, and I think, you know, and Latifi hits real damn hard.
Yeah,
and I think stylistically, that's going to be tough for Corey Anderson. Was it Tyson Pedro that Latifi just absolutely ragdolled and tossed around like it was nobody's business? Okay. Yes. And he beat OSP, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and didn't Corey Anderson lose to Glover Teixeira?
And OSP. So by MMA math.
MMA math, Latifi wins by first round knockout.
Pretty much, yeah. Latifi by knockout is coming in at plus 125. You know, I'll put it this way. If you just want to go, will the fight go the distance and disregard the 2.5, they've got it as a pick'em as to whether or not the fight goes the distance. So there's a good chance that Corey Anderson gets slept in this fight. Latifi beat OSP and OSP kicked Corey Anderson to sleep. So, I think you hit the nail on the head with Anderson's wrestling being the X factor, how well he's able to execute. I just don't think he's going to be able to execute. Latifi always seems like he's one fight away from having a big, like, number one contender fight. And with the state of the light heavyweight division being what it is right now, I think there's no better time on a card like this that's going to be showcased by light heavyweights to go out there and absolutely smack the taste out of Corey Anderson's mouth. You know, like you said, he hits real damn hard. Could you imagine going out there and knocking Corey Anderson into a semi-vegetative state and then calling out the winner of the Gustafson-Jones fight? It'd be real hard to not give that some credence, or at least let it, you know, catapult you to a number one contender fight. You know, obviously you've got guys like Anthony Smith waiting in the wings, but you know, if you're Aleir Latifi, you're chomping at the bit to get at Corey Anderson on Saturday night. I think just the play on Latifi, even though he's minus 140, I think the play on Latifi just winning the fight is the right play there.
But wouldn't that be the craziest thing to see Latifi and John Jones, you know, across the octagon from each other?
Oh, that's
like
that's...
John Jones was what, like a seven inches taller, probably a 10 or 11 inch reach advantage. Like,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It really would. Like watching the original UFCs.
Yeah. That's really what it would look like. It would look like two guys and you look at them, you don't understand. It'd be hard to justify to an outsider that they're the same species of human. All right. Next fight, we got Michael Chiesa and Carlos Condit. So Chiesa's making the move up from lightweight, and I would imagine he's going to stay at welterweight now. He was a massive lightweight, but Chiesa's coming up. He's fighting Carlos Condit, and Condit's currently on a 4-fight losing streak. Chiesa's the minus 170 favorite. Coming back, Condit's plus 145 over under 2.5 rounds as a pick'em.
Has Chiesa fought since Anthony Pettis?
No, because of the bust, McGregor. I don't know if anything's happened since then.
Okay.
I'd have to look, but I don't think so.
No, I think that was his last fight. I think so. I think we're on the same page here. I picked against Chiesa last time when he fought Anthony Pettis. And I think I'm going to pick against them here. I'm going to go with Carlos Condit.
I want Condit to win this fight. I really do. I really want him to win. I'm with you on that. So Chiesa has not fought since the Pettis fight. So he's on a 2-fight streak of his own, losing streak. And Condit, you know, like I said, is on a 4-fight losing streak. Here's the thing about Carlos Condit is the cat's out of the bag on how to beat him. And that's to pressure him and wrestle the shit out of him. So I guess the X factor becomes, how good does Michael Chiesa look at 170 when he doesn't have that massive weight cut to 155? You know, everybody knows he's very adept at taking the back. He's very good at slipping in that rear naked choke. Can Condit avoid that? Because Condit is like another one of my favorite fighters, Cub Swanson, where he will tap to a choke almost immediately. You know, he also hasn't won a fight since 2015. So I'm just on the fence, you know, with how solidly I believe in Carlos Condit winning this fight. However, I think Chiesa is the matchup that he needs to get back in the win column. Because it's a guy coming up from 155, so he's not all the things that he enjoyed at 155, being the bigger guy, being the stronger guy, are not going to translate in the 170-pound weight class, because Condit's coming down from, I'm sure, you know, when he's not in training camp, from the upper 190s, 200, coming down to 170, at peak performance time. I think Condit's going to get back on the winning track here. I think he's going to do it. I don't necessarily know he's going to get Chiesa out of there, but I think he's going to do enough to win. If we know anything, Carlos Condit can point fight the crap out of somebody, and I think he'll be able to do that here. So that's what I think for that fight. All right, co-main event. Dude, this is I don't know how I feel about this. You're going to hear my mind work its way out while we're talking about this. Amanda Nunes taking on Cyborg. Nunes is a plus 200 underdog. Cyborg coming in at a minus 250, which is this is the most even, and I use that term loosely, I've ever seen a Cyborg fight, come across a betting line. And the over under is at 2.5 rounds, under 2.5 coming in at minus 160.
That's crazy for a chick fight.
I feel like that's a good bargain right there.
Yeah, but
over 2.5 at 135 plus 135.
Yeah, I also feel like we're looking at two world class talents, and I feel like this might steal the show as far as, you know, the title fights, as this being a better fight than John Jones and Gus. It's so hard to pick against Cyborg. She's done nothing but give you a reason to pick her every single time. You know what I mean? It's just, has there been, you know, an easier favorite to bet in the UFC in the past 10 years?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know what I mean? Like, what is she? But Amanda Nunes, and I know a couple months ago, I was... When they first put out the lines for the Joanna and Shevchenko fight and the Cyborg Nunes fight, I said, you know, Nunes coming in at a plus, I think it was a plus 250 at the time. Those are good odds on, you know, quite the talent. And then, a couple episodes ago, we were talking about the best women fighters in the world, and I made the case for Amanda Nunes. But now I'm sitting here and I'm like, I can't pick against Cyborg. I can't.
Yeah, it's, you know, the thing with Cyborg is it turns into this, you have to pick her until proven otherwise. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's anything that's popping out to me that says Amanda Nunes is about to shock the world. I felt that way with the Henry Cejudo Mighty Mouse fight. I don't feel that way about this fight. Do I think Amanda Nunes can win this fight? Yes. I made the argument with you earlier. I'll make the argument again now, is I think Nunes has faced better competition than Cyborg has and has found success against better competition than Cyborg has. The thing is with Cyborg is the reason why she hasn't faced upper level competition is you cannot find women brave enough to face her. Amanda Nunes is the first one that's actually shown up and is willing to do it. And the thing with Cyborg and even Amanda Nunes, respectively, is that both of these women know that whoever wins this fight will be catapulted into the freaking stratosphere as far as the UFC hype machine goes. So whoever, you know, I don't know what their paydays are for this fight, but for whoever wins this fight stands to be the face of women's MMA in the UFC moving forward till Kingdom Come. How do you not? How do you not? If you're Nunes, you know, the stakes are ultimately, you know, at a different level of height because she's already a champ. So, you know, the first women's double champ, only women's double champ. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that. You know, legacy is on the line here between both of these women. And I think that, you know, that fact is not lost on either one of them. But like you said, how do you not pick Cyborg? I don't know how you don't pick her. You know, you could go for the shock. Amanda Nunes may shock the world. I just don't see it happening. I like the
So is it Cyborg's belt on the line here?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Nunes is coming up from Bantam to featherweight?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't remember if they were fighting at like a catchweight for a super fight, or I didn't expect Cyborg to come down to what, 135.
Yeah, I don't think she can. I don't think.
No, I mean, she's absolutely a shredded monster at, you know, probably 160. She weighs in at 145, but she's, yeah, I don't think she can get down to 135. I don't think it's physically possible for her.
No. Yeah, I think Cyborg in the third round. I'm just throwing that out there. The play is Cyborg. I like Cyborg in the third round. You know, one of the things about here's the thing about this fight, dude, is that it could be one where they come out and they just go ham sandwich right from the jump and it's over in the first round, or they could both come out and both ladies sort of, fail to get things kickstarted because of everything that's on the line. And the fight becomes just a dragging doldrum of, you know, feeling out jabs and inside leg kicks and clinch work up against the fence and stuff like that. So if that comes into play, who does that favor if that's the way the fight goes? You know, obviously I think Nunes needs to come out and try to snuff Cyborg out immediately to have any chance. I don't think she wins this fight in rounds 4 and 5. My personal play is I'm taking Cyborg in round 3, just thinking on Nunes coming out and being tough to put away in round 1, squeaking her way through round 2, and then Cyborg finishing her off in round 3. So that's my personal play is Cyborg in round 3, but I think Cyborg just, you know, for the fight itself. Any thoughts on method of victory or win or anything like that?
Nah, I just, like I said, like, I mean, you touched on it. They could come out guns blazing. This could end quick. Or I think that this fight has a potential to go the distance. And if it's a close one, man, I mean, like you said, the winner's going to get just catapulted into, you know, a different world. If it's a close one, I think both of them are on that catapult and they both just get shot up. So, well, it's going to be interesting.
Ideal. Yeah.
Right. And it would be different because it'd be actually like, you know, it wouldn't be like a Ronda Rousey where it's, you know, the very beginning of women in the UFC and she's fighting a bunch of scrubs. It's two chicks that have proven themselves. And, you know, you could actually get behind that and cheer for them.
Yeah, so you're catching two peak predators at the top of their performance, whereas Rousey was just like the first kid to hit puberty at school is all that was. She just developed faster than everybody else. But once everybody caught up, it wasn't even remotely close. All right.
Right.
John Jones, Alexander Gustafson. I'll give you the line. I'm still mad about this. All right. Gus is coming in plus 230 underdog. Jones is coming in at minus 280. Over under is at 4.5 rounds. And that's at a pick 'em. Go ahead.
I like Bones and I like it to go to the distance. Probably John Jones by unanimous decision. I hope it's half the fight that their first fight was. That's all I can really hope for, man. What a brawl it was. Both guys ended up in the hospital afterwards. But I said it, you know, I understand you're going to touch on the current, you know, circumstance of moving from Vegas to California and USADA and all of that. But as far as just the fight goes, John Jones will be the double champ in the next 12 months. He's going to win this, and then he's going to beat DC, and he's going to be the double champ. Bones Jones for the win.
Well, one thing that, I hate cheaters, dude. I really do.
But here's my thing. I this is a serious question. I'm not like making a case for him.
No.
If I understand correctly, it's still in his system from the last time, correct? That's his case he's making.
That's the case that Nowitzki's making, yes.
Okay, right. And now Nowitzki's doing that for the sake of the UFC. Is that your beliefs as far as trying to protect one of their money makers and make correct. That case? Because he's now like, basically UFC brass, right? He's in the UFC building.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, so, your personal opinion, do you think that it's still in his system from last time? Or do you think he was doping again?
From an education standpoint, I'm not qualified to say whether or not that's how it works.
Okay.
Dana White is showing or saying that John Jones has been drug tested 8 times in the last 6 months and it has never shown up. And now it's showing up. He says that as if that confirms their argument. I think it weakens it. I think that John Jones, and I think everybody in their life has a guy like this that just can't get out of their own fucking way. And John Jones can't get out of his own way. I don't think I hate to attack a guy, but I don't think he's a good person. Do I think he's talented? Sure. But I just don't think he can get out of his own way. I think he's too morally and ethically corrupt to get out of his own way. Does he have does he have all the skills to be the best to ever do it? For sure. But can you make an argument that he was? I don't see how people can. I know people say it, but I don't see how you can. You got caught cheating twice. Like it doesn't. I don't know how you make the argument. Go ahead.
Okay. So say he wins this fight against Gus and he keeps, taking the drug tests and he fights DC and he beats DC and he comes back clean. Then what?
Well, here's the thing though, is that how do you not just do the, just keep using the same drug that you're using? This turbinol or whatever, right? Just right. Keep using it. And then if it does show up and say you cycle, whatever, say you do a 2-month cycle or 2-week cycle or whatever the case may be, cycle on, cycle off. And every time you get popped or get air quote caught, oh, it's pulsing again, right?
I mean, eventually it has to leave his system, right? Or is it just like dormant and it lives in there like herpes forever?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't understand. I've never heard of this. Okay, think about it like this. Of all the athletes that have ever existed in the history of competitive sports where steroids have been an issue, have you ever heard anybody combat with the term pulsing before?
No, I haven't.
Right. So have you ever, seen the UFC give credence or leeway to a cockamamie story like this? Ever. No. Anytime that anybody has had a piss sample come back for anything whatsoever, they immediately pull the fighter. There's not even an attempt to say it's this pulsing effect. Like, how did they arrive at John Jones taking the test, the results of the test coming back, and then them determining it's a pulsing thing? Whereas Mark Hunt's argument with Brock Lesnar during the UFC 200 fight was, you tested Brock Lesnar and didn't even get his results back until after we fought. So how on earth do you expect anybody to believe this? It doesn't make any... John Jones got caught cheating again. And, they're like, oh, well, it's a metabolite that's so small, it's physically impossible to ingest that amount. Okay, cool. But if John Jones ended his roid cycle 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and then you tested him now, how much of it is left in his system? Could it be a metabolite amount that's not, that's small enough that you can't actually physically ingest that? Like, I can take Tylenol now, and in 3 days you test my blood and there will be trace amounts of the Tylenol in my blood. And you'll say, well, it's too small of an amount for you to physically take, but it wasn't when I took it 3 days ago. You see what I'm saying? I don't,
yeah.
I'm not medically qualified. I'm not obviously not a fucking doctor. I don't know. But if you're a cheater, if you cheat in combat sports or any sports one time, you're more likely to do it again. You can't name a fighter. I'm sitting here trying to rack my brain. Name a fighter that's been caught for steroids once.
Yeah.
They always get caught again.
Yeah.
Paul Harris, Josh Barnett, Frank Mir, John Jones, Brock Lesnar, Fabricio Verdum, Crow Cop, Gabriel Gonzaga. You know, if they get caught once, they get caught again. They can't get out of their own way. So either all those other guys got caught with pulsing like John Jones, or they were all using steroids twice. Now, this being the third time, it's walked like a duck, it's talked like a duck. Now you're popping for a third time, you're a duck, bro. John Jones is a cheater. He's an absolute cheater, but he's a cheater that's going to win this fight. Alexander Gustafsson thinks that he has John Jones' number. He's going to try to run and point fight the shit out of him. He keeps saying he's going to finish John Jones. He's not going to finish John Jones. If he tries to, he's going to get finished. Alexander Gustafsson has developed a strategy the last two or three fights where he run, like physically will run away in a fight. He will engage, and then when he's in a compromising situation, he will literally run like a half lap around the cage and then reset. All the physical advantages that John Jones usually enjoys in fights will not be a factor fighting Alexander Gustafsson, but I just don't think Gus has it in him to win this fight. Plus, he's going up against the genetically modified, creature here. And I think John Jones is going to win this fight. Guys that use steroids and guys and girls that miss weight win at just such an alarming rate. It's impossible to go against. And I think John Jones gets the W here. So, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Cyborg's name talking about steroids as well. You know, obviously, roided to the gills. Maybe not now, but for most of her career was absolutely roided out of her mind. So, all the same, I think John Jones wins the fight. I'm not going to be happy that he wins, and I will scream for joy if he loses. But from a betting perspective, it makes no sense to bet on Alexander Gustafsson for this fight. In a play for Gustafsson, unless you know something that I don't, would be merely just a play with your heart, not your head. Your head says, you know, with the exception of the Matt Hamill fight, which they gave John Jones as a loss for those elbows, John Jones has never lost a fight. This would be 18 fight win streak in the UFC. Nobody's ever had an 18 fight win streak. He's looking to make it 19. So what do you do here? You know what I mean? How do you not go with John Jones? You have to. And then the fact that you know that he's been doped out of his gills for the last 3 years, why not? Go with it. So, John Jones begrudgingly, but John Jones nonetheless, unless you got something else.
Hey, if you guys can't tell, he's not a huge fan of John Jones. just throwing that out there. If that wasn't entertaining enough for you, as I was listening to him talk, I, you know, got on John Jones' Twitter, and man, is his Twitter good. The beef between him and DC, man, just the back and forth. John Jones saying he'll pay DC, or he'll give 150 grand to the charity of DC's choice if he fights him. And DC told him to keep the 150 grand, that he'll donate it. John Jones just has to pay for drug testing before they fight. John Jones saying that, daddy's back and his little girl ran away because she's afraid to get beat. These two are wild, man. It's hilarious. I can't wait until they fight again after John Jones beats Gustafsson. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you know what I like? This is what I like. I like the fact that Cain Velasquez is coming back and he's fighting Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, how about that being on ESPN?
Right. I like the fact that this Brock Lesnar DC fight is probably not going to happen. So here's what I like. I like John Jones to go in there and absolutely shit pump Alexander Gustafsson. And then I like Velasquez to come back and return to form and throttle Ngannou. They make DC wants to be retired by the end of March. End of March, they have DC fight Jones for the heavyweight belt. Jones beats DC. Cain Velasquez comes in July 4th card and big brothers the shit out of John Jones. John Jones versus Cain Velasquez, middle of July. Fantastic fight of the freaking millennia.
Yeah, I was going to say that's like. That'd be the super fight of all super fights. That's the GSP Anderson Silva that never happened. You know what I mean?
There's no bigger fight that you can make. Yeah. Yeah. Velasquez versus John Jones at heavyweight.
Speaking of GSP, not to, you know, give credit to another podcast, but did you listen to his interview?
No. Who was he on with?
PMT.
Oh, no. No, I didn't.
Dude. GSP, that dude's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, good stuff. I forgot to ask you about it. Yes, it was him, 100%. He's talking about a kid that beat his ass in high school and how he saw him on the street homeless like 15 years later, and the guy trembled because GSP, you know, talking in his accent was because he knows I beat his ass now, and it was funny. It was good stuff. But
I'll have to go back and listen to it. I skipped over it. So a lot of times with like with those guys, they know a lot about a lot of things, but they know absolutely nothing about fighting. So to hear them talk to a fighter about anything is sort of like, how did you get punched in the face? You know, the first time that made you like it, and it's very just weird.
This one was good. They basically let him run the interview.
Nice.
And it was very serious. I mean, they asked a couple goofy questions, but it was very serious, and they let GSP they asked very broad questions and let him run with it and explain stuff. So it was good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
All right, guys. Well, there's no point in dragging it out any longer than this. You guys have already been here for an hour now. Appreciate you guys. Really glad to be back. And, you know, just thankful for you guys sticking with us, and we appreciate, all the support. Hopefully everybody had a good holiday season, and, looking forward to New Year's, and probably won't talk to you guys till after the New Year. So be safe New Year's. And, if you're going to have a drink, even one, get somebody to drive for you. It's not worth it. It's not worth it for you, and it's not worth it for somebody that you might, irresponsible enough to be involved in a crash with or something to that effect. So it's not just about you. It's about the other people on the road too. So do the right thing. Do the responsible thing. Call Uber, call Lyft, call a friend, call anybody. Hell, if you're in the greater Charleston area, call me and I'll come pick you up. So that way nobody's driving drunk. I'll see you guys after the New Year. If I don't talk to you on social media between now and then, and be on the lookout this weekend on Instagram. We're going to announce the giveaway winner, but that's it for me, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, guys, enjoy Bowl Mania. Enjoy week 17. Big UFC card. A lot going on. We'll talk to you next week. And I'll get back to it, as always. Clear eyes, full fist. Can't lose.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.